Good morning. I'm going to be reading from John 13 this morning, but you need to know where in the story we're picking up. Otherwise, we have to read like several chapters and then several more chapters, and we don't have time for that. You get a snippet, but you need to know where that snippet came from. Jesus, at this point, has just shared his final meal with the disciples. You don't get a Last Supper proper in John's gospel. Instead, you get this meal in John 13 where he washes their feet. And it's more or less the Last Supper, just in a different way, in a different context. What makes this really weird is this is John 13, which means we've got like six more chapters before Jesus actually goes to the cross. Whereas in the other gospels, the Last Supper happens kind of like right before the arrest, and then right before the, you get a whole bunch of exposition in John. And this is part of that. This is right after that final meal, but this is also right after Judas has left the room to betray him. Judas is not a sneaky fellow. Judas is just about as sneaky as my youngest daughter, Tristan. Tristan asked me a couple weeks ago to take off my glasses in her toddler babble. And I finally understood. I took off my glasses, and then she proceeded to slowly back out of the room and try to turn around and then run towards the back door of the house, which had a screen on it, but the door was slid open because it was nice weather that day, unlike yesterday. And she tried to make a run for it and then bounced off the screen door. But she thought that if I took off my glasses, I wouldn't see her escape. That's how sneaky Judas is. Judas has been invited by Jesus to leave the room to go betray him. And everybody knows it. That has just happened before this verse. The shadow of the cross is looming. And in this moment, knowing that his time is short, Jesus doesn't give a list of final instructions. He gives one command. He doesn't have a lot of time left, and he wants to use it wisely. And this is not a sentimental or a surface level kind of moment. This is not just a simple goodbye. It's a moment where he teaches them about love, a kind of love that washes feet, forgives betrayal, and gives everything for the sake of others. It's the love that will lead him to the cross. So as you listen to this passage, I need you to hear not only the challenge of the command, but also the context, the hope and transformation it offers. Through this love, Christ is still made known to this day, in us, through us. The word of the Lord from John 13, verses 31 through 35. When he had gone out, Judas had gone out, Jesus said, "Now the Son of Man has been glorified, and God has been glorified in him. If God has been glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself and will glorify him at once." And at this point, the disciples are just about as lost in the in hymns as you are. Okay. They've just had a big meal. They're extra sleepy. You haven't had a big meal. You're extra sleepy. So he streamlines it. "Little children, I am with you only a little longer. You will look for me. And as I said to the Jews, so now I say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. So I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." And every parent in this room knows exactly what speech Jesus just gave. This is the, "I'm leaving this room. I'm leaving you in the presence of other people. If I come back and find out that you weren't nice to each other, I'm not going to own you anymore. You are anathema. You're cut off. You need to be nice." That's what this feels like, doesn't it? But that's not what this is. That's what this would have been if Jesus gave this command before Judas left the room. But it's not. This is what he says after Judas leaves the room. He is calling his disciples to love even Judas. He's one of them. Jesus knows what Judas is doing. He knows he's going out there to betray him. He knows what's going to happen. This is an intimate setting here in John 13 around this dinner table. He's washed their feet. His disciples are gathered around a table, now what we call the Last Supper. Judas has gone into the night. The mood is heavy. He knows what's coming. He is hours away from his arrest, his trial, the cross. And yet, instead of withdrawing into fear or focusing on his own suffering or just feeling bad for himself, we'll do that in the garden, but not here. Here, in this moment, he speaks of glory and love. And it is striking that he speaks so tenderly, so vulnerably. In a moment of deep sorrow and looming betrayal, he calls the disciples little children, which I don't think most adults like being called. And he gives them a new commandment. Let's be clear here. That's not like, I need you to do one more thing, one more set of instructions. When he says new commandment, that's a loaded phrase. He's saying, you have 10, let's take it up to 11. I'm adding one more to the tablets. A new commandment. He's adding to the 10. Love one another. Specifically, love one another the way that I have loved you. And even as he says this, he knows they won't be able to do it. Not yet. Peter is hours away from denying him three times over. The others are going to scatter in fear and hide and leave him alone. They will fail to love him and each other right after he says this. And the disciples aren't confused about what he wants. He's clear. Love one another. But knowing and doing are not the same thing. They cannot yet love the way that he loves. The kind of love Jesus is describing, this self-giving, sacrificial love, is foreign to their instincts. It's difficult to embody, especially in moments of pain and fear and loss and grief. In this moment, Jesus calls them to a love they cannot yet live, and that tension hangs in the air. We live in a world that talks a lot about love, but we often fail to practice it this way, his way. We praise love in songs, it's celebrated in stories, it's encouraged in relationships, but when love becomes costly, when it requires patience or sacrifice or vulnerability, we step back. Much like the disciples, we know what Jesus asks of us, and yet we find it incredibly difficult to live out. In our churches, our families, our friendships, we wrestle with the very same struggles. People disappoint us. They hurt us. They fail to meet our expectations. Sometimes they go out and betray us. And we do the same things to them. Forgiveness doesn't come easily. Compassion is reserved for those we think deserve it. And we draw lines between us and them, between those who belong and those who don't. Even within the body of Christ, love is not always a defining mark like it should be. How long did we segregate our churches? How long did we silence voices? How long did we wage wars in God's name? The command to love as Jesus loves runs up against our pride, our fear of being taken advantage of, our instinct to protect ourselves. We may say we love others, but when we are wronged, when our priorities are challenged, or when we are simply tired, we falter. We run and hide. We deny. We betray. And beyond that personal level, the whole world is marked by this division, isn't it? By tribalism, by hatred, exclusion, violence. It's easier to hold grudges than it is to extend grace, and it's easier to stay comfortable than to live sacrificially. So we, like the disciples, we know the commandment, but living it, that's where we often fall short. And even as Jesus names this love that seems beyond reach, he still doesn't leave them without hope. He doesn't just tell them what to do. He shows them how to do it. He shows them. He's already shown them in this meal. He says, love as I have loved you, so you must love one another. What kind of love is that? It's the love he's shown in washing their feet. It's the love he showed Judas as he left the room. It's the love that he will show them on the cross. Earlier that same evening, he got down on his knees, washed their feet, a servant's task done by the very Son of God. He washed Judas's feet that night. He washed Peter's feet. He washed, don't miss the irony here. This is not just some odd Christian ceremony that you see sometimes at weddings that you don't know what to do with, so you pretend it's quirky and fun. He washed the feet of the men who are going to run away on those very same feet. And he knew it. While he washed between the toes, while he scrubbed, he knew those feet were going to get dirty as they ran away. And now he speaks of glory, a glory that doesn't come from power or victory or conquest, but by the kind that comes through self-giving, through a love that's poured out to the very end. He knows these men will fail him. He knows Peter will deny him. He knows their fear will scatter them. And yet, he chose to love them. He still calls them his own. He still entrusts them with this mission to carry his love into the world. And this is not a love you manufacture on your own. It doesn't come ex nihilo out of nothing. It begins with Jesus. It flows from him. His love has changed us first. And then that empowers us to love others. This moment at this meal is how Peter, in that story we just read from Acts, is able to extend the love of Christ to Cornelius. That's what Peter must have been thinking about in this moment. He washed my feet. Surely I should wash Cornelius's feet. I can accept him too. The command to love is not a burden. It's a gift. It sets you free from your anger and your hatred. Those are burdens. We talk about carrying grudges. We don't often talk about carrying love. This is an invitation to live the same love that we have received. The love he commands is not only possible, it's already at work in the world, everywhere his spirit is alive and in his people. We are not left to love on our own strength, by our own bootstraps. The same love that washed feet and hung on the cross now lives in us through the risen Christ. And when we allow that love to shape our lives, our relationships, something holy happens. We begin to recognize Christ in one another. This is the grace of Christian community. Not that we agree on everything, not that we never hurt each other, but that we are bound together by a love that is deeper than disagreement and is stronger than failure. When we forgive, when we serve, when we speak truth with gentleness, when we carry each other's burdens, we make Christ visible. The world catches a glimpse of him in our compassion, our unity, our mercy. This is the kind of love that transforms not only individuals, but entire communities, the world. It breaks down walls. It heals wounds. It opens doors that seemed forever closed. It is how people know we belong to Christ, not by our words, but by our love. And it's in those moments when love is extended unexpectedly, when grace is offered freely, when enemies become brothers and sisters, that is when we see the presence of Christ most clearly in this world. To love one another is not just to obey a command, it is participation in the very life of God. If God is love, then when you choose love, you choose God. It is to see and be seen by Christ in the faces of those around us. There's an old story that I heard years ago. I say old, it's not older than most of us, but it's old to me at least. Or at least I feel like I've carried this story for a very long time. It's not even mine, it's somebody else's. Preachers collect stories, if you didn't know. So if you don't want a preacher to use a story, don't ever tell a preacher a story. This is a story that I collected a long time ago of a woman who was riding a train in Russia, metro train. And she looked around and she saw the people in the train car with her. And she saw someone who was homeless, wearing clothes that were full of holes, and they were shivering and cold. She saw a woman trying to wrangle babies and toddlers who were being rambunctious. None of you know anything about that. She saw a man who was staring at the person who is homeless with disgust in his eyes. She saw a soldier dressed in a uniform. She saw all sorts of people riding on this train. And then she looked again, and she realized that within each and every one of them is the very Spirit of God. And when she saw that, she no longer saw someone who is homeless. She saw a child of God. She no longer saw a mother with loud children. She saw the patience and grace and mercy and the exhaustion of a child of God. She didn't see a disgruntled old man judging someone else who is homeless. She saw a child of God. She saw in each of them the face of Christ. Not necessarily because any of them were doing something that exhibited God or exhibited Christ, but because something in her had changed. In that moment, she had chosen to extend the love of them that she had learned from Christ, which means to love them as she had been loved, to choose to treat them as if they were image bearers of God, which she knew they were. It changed her. It didn't change any of those people. Nobody on the train changed what they were doing. Nobody acted differently, but she saw the world around her differently. And she realized what she was experiencing, what she was seeing, must have been what Christ saw from the cross as he looked out on the crowd of people who were yelling and gambling over his clothes, people who were jeering, people who were holding weapons and stabbing and nailing. She realized in that moment when he looked down from the cross, what did he see? He saw his Father in each of them, forgave them, loved them. It changes the world, not externally, but from in here, how you experience the world around you. To recognize that the person with road rage might be in a hurry to get to a hospital to say goodbye to somebody who's dying. To recognize that the person who is annoying you in the elevator by chewing their gum too loudly might be trying to fight off an addiction that killed their family. To recognize that the world is more complicated than it seems, and to choose to see Christ in every corner, every nook, every cranny. And as we come to this table, we remember that the love that he spoke of in these words isn't just some beautiful idea. It's embodied in his actions. That very night, he shared a meal with his disciples. Those who would betray him shared a cup. Those who would deny him, he washed. Those who would abandon him, he loved. And still, he broke bread, poured a cup, and said, "This is my body given for you. This is my blood shed for you." In this meal in communion, we don't just remember something that happened millennia ago. We receive it. We are nourished by his grace. We are reminded that his love is not something we must earn. It's a gift freely given. Here at this table, we are united, not because of how we vote, not because of the color of our skin, not because of the opinions and values we hold. We are united, not because we are perfect, but because we are his. As you share this meal, look around you. Recognize Christ in one another. See what he saw from up on the cross. Different as we may be, one body called to love as we have been loved. Come to this table, not because you are worthy, but because Christ welcomes you the same way he welcomed his disciples. Come with open hands, open hearts, and a desire to be shaped by his love so that we might carry that love into the world. Let's stand and sing.